'cause I'm working for a living. Hey, I'm not complaining 'cause I really need the work, but hitting up my buddies got me feeling like a jerk. $100 condo, $200 rent. I get a check on Friday, but it's already spent. Working for a living. Now we're in the landscape and gardening hour, and although it can by some people be considered work when you're outside and you're planting and you're weeding and you're sowing and all this, but I've seen and read a lot of things about the mental restoration of gardening and being outside, and that it's in the long run cheaper than a therapist. So,
well, my neighbor and I joke, you can tell what kind of day we've had by who's home earliest mowing their lawn. And how and
the stress relief and how the fast pressure relief
and how fast you're mowing the lawn and the, you know, the pattern you're mowing it in and all of that stuff. So, you know, you talk about work and in the garden. Another old family friend, very successful businessman here. You know, I would always say, you know, take that stuff and work it in. He goes, no, don't use the, tell them to turn it. Don't use the term work when you're telling me, because you don't want them to think it's work. But if you know, if you're at the end of the day, it's great exercise. You know, you can burn as many calories gardening in an hour as you can at the gym, and gets you some fresh air, and you've got something to show for it. Hopefully, when you're all done.
Absolutely, something to show for, and we love just being able to go out and pick what you need for a salad.
Yeah.
During this time, our salads never go bad because we only pick what we need to eat, and you could change it up and make it different almost every night. Great time to do that. On fertilizing citrus.
Mm-hmm.
Every time or every year at Shade, it seems like there's some new injector, some new product, some new method, some new system of fertilizing, most of which are liquid applications. It seems to be more the professional style to do it liquid, but the consumer side is more granule.
Well, the liquids are fine, except that you have to be able to efficiently apply them, and that usually involves some type of injector system or some way to mix it right into the irrigation system, which there are some products that aren't terribly expensive, and you can do them. BioFeed has a really nice, well-engineered little unit that's perfect for a homeowner. The trick to that is you got to make sure you keep it full, keep product in it, because it's continuously doing that. Or, you know, you could turn it on and off. So, you know, for the professional, if he installs one of those, you know, all he has to do is check that tank, you know, every week when they're at the property, you know, and it's easier for them than to spend the time. It's a lot less labor if you're, you know, using labor to generate revenue. It's a lot less intensive to fill that tank up than it is to go around and make sure you granular. Plus, the margin of error by somebody over applying a granular fertilizer is a lot less. So, you know, you do have those issues.
Rosie rule.
Yeah. Double it, it'll be better.
If a little does a little good, then a whole lot's going to do wonders. Yeah.
So the liquids, you know, certainly have their place. And I think there's a place if you are ambitious enough and you want to, you know, and you don't have to use an injector. They make products that you can screw on the end of the hose and they just self-feed. Now, the problem with liquids here, where we water a lot and irrigate a lot, is they don't typically stay around very long. So you have to apply them. And that's why the best way to do it is a continuous process injected right into the system. So that tree or shrub or vine or lawn or garden is getting a little bit of that all the time.
In addition to fertilizing, vegetable gardening, it's also a great time for planting. You mention all the time, this is kind of like it's a second growing season for a lot of trees.
Yeah, and so the reason this is coming up now is a great time to plant, especially trees and shrubs, is that the warm, you know, the soil is going to stay warmer a lot longer. It doesn't cool down as fast. So you get this great combination of cooling air and less stress to the plant from, you know, transpiration and moisture loss because the atmosphere and the air around it is cooler, but the soil is still warm, so it's like an incubator. So if we plant trees especially, but trees, shrubs, and vines in the fall, you have less stress. You don't have to water. You don't have to be as diligent about making sure they're watered and staying on top of it. And then the roots, before any plant can grow, they really have to start establishing roots. And we have an old saying that the plants at first sleep. You know, so they're sitting there kind of doing nothing, it appears, because you can't see the root growth that's happening below soil. And then they creep. They start kind of the rooting starts creeping, and then they leap. And so if you plant in the fall, you kind of don't see much. But then come next spring when things warm up, they leap. They literally jump. It's almost like gaining a full year by planting a few months ahead and doing it in the fall.
And there's no tree you couldn't plant right now.
You know, it's maybe just still a little tad warm for certain stone fruits and things like that. I might wait just a little bit longer. And the things that go dormant, or go deciduous in their dormancy, so peaches and apples and pears and those types of fruit trees, plums, apricots, you can plant them all winter, and that's a good time to plant them. It's less stressful to them. But here, you know, from about here on, until we get closer to frost dates, and then you kind of want to watch some of the frost-sensitive things like jacarandas and orchids and some of the real tender-type trees, the real tropical, subtropical stuff, you know. But so you have a window, middle of September to the middle or end of October, where you can plant about anything, including the frost-tender stuff. Then once we get past October, ficus and those types, you really want to be a little bit careful with those.
If you have a landscape or gardening question, you can jump on the line at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Text option, if you don't have time to sit on the phone, is 411-923. Does not accept pictures on the text option. You can email those to info@rosieonthehouse.com. Getting close to our transitioning time for lawns, going from summer Bermudas to rise, if you're a homeowner that does both or would like a winter lawn. This, you often mention, if you're going to have a lawn and you want to save water, do a winter lawn, not a summer lawn.
Well, if you could let code enforcement in the city let your summer lawn die, and you might have some issues with that. It's certainly, I think, the prettier lawn. It's a lot more fun to mow when it's 70 degrees than when it's 170 degrees.
Kids love it because it's not nearly as itchy as Bermuda, right, at all. It stains your clothes harder, but you know, that's a different.
Let's just say this: if you're going to have a lawn, have a good lawn. If you're not, then don't get rid. There's a lot of alternatives these days. So there's no mandate that says you have to have a winter lawn. I just think that's the prettiest part of the year, as far as your flowers. Your pots have got beautiful geraniums, your flower beds are full of flowers, and you have a dormant lawn sitting there. Now, you could paint it.
Now you're talking.
and have a green lawn all winter with a painted dormant lawn. That'd probably be okay. But a couple of things. If you're going to plant a winter lawn, you probably don't want to fertilize now your summer lawn. You don't want to push it any harder, because you do want it to go dormant more readily, especially after you scalp it. Don't be in a big hurry to scalp it. We see people, they see the golf courses and the resorts, and they'll start here pretty quick, scalping those golf courses down. And they want golfers to be playing the first weekend in October. They don't want to do it right in the middle of their busy season and then lose 2 weeks of revenue. So they've got to do it early, and they've got the horticultural means to do that and take care of the grass. But I really advocate waiting till about the middle of October, even closer to the 1st of November anymore, before scalping. Because if you take a lawn that's actively growing and you cut all the top and take the thatch away, and then you sow a competitor on top of it, and it's still actively trying to grow, but you're inhibiting its growth, you are, in effect, damaging that lawn. The other thing we do no longer recommend is that they dethatch when they overseed. Just scalp it. And we don't even recommend scalping it as severely as we used to. We used to tell people to take it down, right down to the dirt. Get it as low as you can. You know, leave a little bit there. That seed will still get down past it. So you got to scalp it, but don't take it right down to the dirt and don't dethatch it. And if you're not going to plant a winter lawn, don't, you know, you can fertilize and you probably should at least give it one more feeding.
And for Lewis that writes in, it wants artificial turf. And I can tell he's a guy that doesn't like maintenance, mm-hmm. not only because he's looking for artificial turf, but his email address starts with AZ Fisherman. So you could tell where he's spending a lot of his time.
All right.
Not mowing, looking for a green grass option. There are great applications for artificial turf, and especially shaded areas, front lawns. Just make sure you buy a quality one, because if you don't,
right.
you're going to end up where Lewis is. He put one in a couple years ago, and it's already just so weathered it needs to be replaced. So spend the extra money up front to do it right, to get the long-term benefit.
And over the course of the square footage, they're not that much more expensive. And I would advise folks, it's not a do-it-yourself project.
It seems like, you roll out grass.
There's a lot more to it than that. You need to have somebody that knows what they're doing, put those in.
You got to excavate, put in proper backfill.
The right base.
Especially if you have pets, sprinklers, a lot of details.
Yep.
So there's a couple great options. You go to rosieonthehouse.com. We have a great artificial turf partner there. We've got Ted, who wants to talk about fertilizing. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you?
Great.
Very good. Thank you.
My question is, ticks and other bugs in the backyard. We have chickens that are free range. Before we had the chickens, we used to go down to the fertilizer, the bug store, and just put granulars down, and we're afraid that might infect the egg of the chicken.
Well, and I'm sorry, your first identification of the pest I did not get. It was broken up. Did you say ticks?
Ticks, for the dog.
Yeah, okay.
We're just concerned that if we use the same product on the yard that we used to, that it might infect the eggs of the chicken that we're eating.
Well, and it could, I suppose. It depends on what you were using, which you'd have to read the label. You might try something like diatomaceous earth. It's a gritty product. It would certainly kill soft-bodied insects like ticks by, when they kind of walk through it, it slices them up. You'd want to keep the chickens away from it while you're applying it. You don't want them, breathing it in. It's gritty, and if you aspirated it, but as long as you kept them off to the side, and if they pecked a few little bit of it up, it shouldn't hurt anything. But that would be the first thing I could think of that would be, I think, safe to use on ticks.